This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You're back with Bell and Sperling. Listen, we're putting it out there. 0208 70 2558. Send us a WhatsApp. That's the easiest way you can do it. Yeah. Tell us what tattoo you would have.
Yeah.
But what's the maddest tattoo you've ever seen?
Well, what's the maddest tattoo you've... one of your mates might have had a mad one and you can tell us about.
Like, you've seen those people with tattoos on their face?
The ones on the face, down the side, the one, the neck, right up to the neck. It just looks so weird to me. I saw this guy walking down the road yesterday with an absolute belter of a looking woman next to him. I mean, she was beautiful. And he had, like, he had tattoos all down his, like, this side. So he looked like he was one of those aliens. Mm. You know on the films when they got half a face? He had like half a face.
She might not have been real, she might have been a tattoo.
Well, he had all the way down, and he's and one leg all the way.
What, he only had one leg?
No. Oh, right. He had one leg all tattooed.
Oh, I see. Right.
So he looked like half man, half tattoo.
Half leg.
And he's with this stunning looker who didn't have a tattoo on her.
Right.
What do they see in... What's going on?
I know. I'll tell you about the fella I used to see over West Ham.
I don't get it.
He was... this is the maddest thing. He had a spider's web on his face.
Oh, dear.
Right? And he was the poshest fella I'd ever heard.
Really?
Yeah, really posh. Just the last thing you'd
expect. Years ago, son, it used to be that, if tattoos would... You'd be, from like down there.
No, very intelligent people.
Now they're intelligent.
I should tell you about my tattoo in a minute,
okay.
Which I've never had, but no. I was going to have it. We're joined now by Gavin Webster, Newcastle fan and comedian.
Yes, Gavin, you got a tattoo?
No, I don't. I don't actually. No, I like to see myself as a bit of a rebel.
Ah. is that what it is? Having a tattoo is a rebel, is it?
I think so now. I think it's gone, it's gone 180 degree turn, Now, if you haven't got a tattoo, I think people will take note and go, oh, look at him.
Quite true.
Gavin, I'm assuming you wouldn't have a Mike Ashley tattoo on your back.
Oh, no.
No, I don't think that would be appropriate.
What's the feel of Mike Ashley up there?
Mm.
Well, I don't know anybody who's got a good word for him, certainly now. Yeah. I think people used to make excuses for him in the past, but... I can't see anybody who can see his point of view.
Well, Gavin, on Saturday, Piers Morgan did his life stories of Alan Sugar. And Sugar was saying that his time at Spurs, his 10 years, was awful. And at one point, he was just getting death threats and his family were being threatened. Do you think that could be happening to Mike Ashley now?
I think without a doubt. I think he shares a lot. He has a lot in common with Alan Sugar. And yeah. I don't think they understood football, top-level football, and both of them took on big clubs and don't realise what it means to people.
Yes.
And I think they're actually genuinely flabbergasted as to why people are getting so upset.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he says that they worked hard to extend Rafa's contract over a significant period of time, but it's not been able to achieve it. And also, the likes of Alan Shearer has come out and said it's a complete shambles.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to say this and that, aren't they? I mean, they're going to put out statements from their side saying that they tried hard and they gave him this and they gave him that. But ultimately, the proof of it all is in the form of the last 12 years, and not just with Rafa Benitez, with previous managers as well. They've never been given big budgets and there's never been a plan. The stadium is falling to bits and it needs improving. And we've got there's things like there's no money being put in the academy. It's not just the first team squad. There's never been a plan. And if anybody would like to contradict what I'm saying and would like to come up with good, well thought out arguments to the contrary, I'd like to hear them because I'm not seeing it.
These billionaires seem to think that they can just get, they think they can tell, and it's just like a little plaything to them, don't they?
And yeah, I think so. But it is a plaything to an extent. But when they've got to spend serious money, they're not keen on that.
I mean, why would you want to own a football club? Because you're sort of onto an hiding all the time. But I'm just thinking, if he wants to sell the club, surely he would want to keep a good manager in place to sort of sell it on, because then it's a commodity.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they've let him go.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you can't get into the mind of a man and without saying something that's that's out of turn in terms of you know what you can and can't see. I get the impression as a man he just changes his mind a lot. That's what I see from the outside. He says one thing and then he decides that he wants to do another. It's just, as you say, it's like a plaything. It's on a whim, isn't it?
His
real business, which is like, as you alluded to before, selling sports socks and things, that's the thing that he knows, though. That's the thing that he'll be quite consistent with. You make good, well-thought-out, logical decisions on. But the football stuff's all driven by, by his mood swings and, emotions. But the one constant, though, is he doesn't spend any money. And that's not his money either. That's the money that the fans bring in. And the amount of money that has been brought into that club over the last 12 years...
Do you know what, though?
...doesn't it create the stuff that's been spent?
He can't be making much money because he sells some terrible football boots. I mean, listen, honestly, some of the worst. It's the worst.
Good
Adidas.
Socks, though, aren't they?
The socks are right, but the boots, honestly, they're from like 1981. Yeah. And the Copa Mondials, I really don't think they're the right Copa Mondials.
Patrick were big in 1981.
Do you remember Patrick?
Yeah, he were the two stripes going down.
Yes.
Sort of
do you know what?
They were the works then, weren't they?
Gavin, they were powerful boots, those Patrick. I hated other kids who had Patrick boots because I thought they looked like rugby boots to me.
Yeah.
And they had metal studs. Hated him.
Yeah, that's right. And you were like 11 and you had metal studs on you.
Exactly.
So you were going to do like a Norman Hunter on you.
Gavin, who do you think they're going to get now? I mean, all the coaching staff are going to be gone. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, as you just said, they can't promote within unless they get somebody from the academy, but they wouldn't do that. I can only see them getting a manager who wants to put Newcastle United on his CV. Like,
what about Mourinho? Mourinho's apparently, he's odds on, isn't he?
Well, as you just said before, when I was listening to the show, you can't, he's not going to work with a £20 million budget.
No, that's right.
You wouldn't do that.
That's bad, isn't it? I mean,
And you say that the stadium is falling apart. Mm. We're probably about, I don't know, 10 years ago, I was lucky enough to play at Newcastle in a celebrity game. And
I loved it there.
I thought that the stadium was incredible.
Yeah, it was.
And you got such great support. You know, Newcastle fans live and breathe football.
Great nightclubs as well.
Great place, you know. And that sort of life is football. I don't understand why they can't generate enough money to keep Benitez there. Mm.
Absolutely. I do know why it is. I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. This nets this bloke quite a lot of money every year. You know, it's as simple as that, really. And there's a question about the advertising. I don't think it's been disproved that the Sports Direct logo is all over the stadium. And when they're being probed on it, whether they pay for that, they never answer that they do. I mean, I think it's common knowledge that's just free advertising for his company all around the ground, which could be used. Somebody else could advertise that.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be a complete uproar with the fans, isn't there?
Well, yeah. Well, yes and no. In the past, we have had a certain section complaining and people, going in on 11 minutes and not buying anything at the ground, and then there's people said just don't turn up to the game, but it doesn't really affect the gate. It's a drop in the ocean. I'd like to think people will stop going now, but I can't see it. I still think the first game against Arsenal there'll be 52,000 there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether he's probably said we haven't sold enough shirts this year, but not a lot of Newcastle fans wear shirts, do they?
Very true.
Gary, just before we go, we let you go, Gary. You're a comedian.
Gavin,
sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, Gavin. Yeah, I read it wrong. I do it all the time, Gavin. It's all right. Tell me, where are you? Are you in Edinburgh this year, or are you doing anything?
Yeah, I'm in Edinburgh. I'm doing a show in Edinburgh. I'm doing a show at the Stan Comedy Club, Stan 2, called Buddhism and Other Such Rubbish.
I know it very well, the Stan. Isn't that the one with the casino next to it?
It is, yeah. We've actually met before. You're good mates with Terry Ogart, aren't
that's,
you?
That's absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, we met down in Ballam, at the Ballam Banana.
Did we? Oh, God, yes.
Do you know the place?
Of course I know the Ballam Banana. It's a great place to play. Is it still the same?
Yeah, it's still around. It got refurbed, but it's still good.
Oh, is it? Because there's an upstairs, a downstairs.
And a banana.
It's great. The Banana's a really great venue. So you're doing the Stand. You know, that's a good room. That's a good room there.
What's your dates, Gavin, just so we'd let everyone know?
Yeah.
2nd to the 25th of August.
Oh, you're going for it. You're doing the whole run. Wow. Brilliant.
I am, yes.
And of course, the 13th off, isn't it?
That's right. The Monday is off.
The Monday on the 13th is off. Yeah.
Gavin, keep us updated. No doubt we'll speak to you again whilst you're at Edinburgh.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Gavin. Thanks, mate. Thank you very much.
Well done, Gavin Webster. There.
I didn't even know I met him. The ego I know now.
You're not good at that, are you? Newcastle fan and comedian, going to be appearing at Edinburgh Festival. When we come back, we are going to be talking about Harry and Meghan's home renovations. Yeah. They've cost the taxpayers £2.4 million. Yeah,
you don't care, though, do you?
I don't care.
You don't, do you?
I love the rules.
There we go. After this.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
The Royal Family, Harry and Meghan's home renovations have cost the taxpayers £2.4 million, okay? The Duke and Duchess of Sussex home was renovated with £2.4 million taxpayers' money. The Royal Account show Frogmore Cottage in Windsor.
Yes.
Beautiful area.
Yeah.
Was turned into a single property for Prince Harry and Meghan from five separate homes.
Yeah.
Okay.
The couple who moved from Kensington Palace in April before the birth of their son, Archie, paid for fittings.
Okay.
Nice of them.
Queen Sovereign grant from the Treasury... It was 82 million, okay, the grant from the Treasury.
Back of the van stuff, isn't it?
Back of the van. 2018 to 2019, with 33 million set aside for maintenance, including major work on Buckingham Palace. Right, now you don't think it's right?
Damn right, I don't.
Okay,
what?
Okay.
What?
Where does the money come from to pay for the
From us, from the taxpayer.
I know, but you like having the Royal Family. You said the other day you like having them.
I like the Queen.
Right.
Love the Queen.
Wait a minute. You said you liked Harry the other day. You said he's grown on you. Look, you can't... Look, they can't be the Royal Family. We can't hold them up there and go, this is our Royal Family.
Yeah.
And then go, wait a minute, we've got to pay... Like, sort their houses out and keep... And they go, well, we ain't paying for
that. Hang on a minute. Hang on. I can like somebody, but then not like them for freeloading.
They're not freeloaders. They are. It's got to be paid for by somewhere.
She is a multimillionaire. He is a multimillionaire. Pay for your own.
Multimillionaire from what?
They're multimillionaires, believe me.
From what?
Well, Harry's just out of multimillionaire from being Harry.
No.
He is.
That's what I'm saying.
He is.
He's not.
He is.
Right.
You'll find he is.
We're going to ask Richard Fitzwilliam.
He's a multimillionaire, and so is she from being a TV star.
Richard Fitzwilliam, friend of the show, and we always love talking to him. We spoke to him at Ascot last week.
I do like having a debate with you.
Richard, what's your thought? Johnny thinks that £2.4 million is way too much to be spending of our taxpayers' money.
I think you've got to bear in mind how the sovereign grant, such as it is called, which pays for the royals, is drawn up. If a royal inhabits property on the Crown Estate, it becomes the taxpayer's responsibility to do it up. Now, the reason for Harry and Meghan's relocation to Frogmore was almost certainly that of security and safety. It isn't that they are unsafe at Kensington Palace, but if you go into the park, for example, there are paparazzi. I mean, they had to relocate from a country home in the Cotswolds because of paparazzi in a plane. I mean, there is this aspect of it. Harry is obsessive about it. Remember, again, that he is so haunted by what has happened to his mother.
Yeah.
And I think that is behind part of it. The other part of it is I do think it is wrong. Of course, it's important that it's 2.4 million. That isn't the entire bill. It's most of the bill. But what is wrong is to concentrate on this one figure to the exclusion, for example, of the rest of it. The way it's calculated is that in 1760, George III surrendered the income from the crown lands in exchange for what was called the civil list. That was abolished. The Queen got 50% of the income from the crown lands, now 328 million, and that's roughly £50 million. And the refurbishment of Buckingham Palace, which would take 10 years, could get another 10%. That is absolutely essential. It's the cord that binds the monarchy to the public for jubilees, for changing the colour, for changing the guard, and so on. And that is the non-negotiable part of it. And that is the reason it's gone up so much.
Why do you think, like John just said, that they're both multi-millionaires, Harry and Meghan?
But you can't take all this into account. If you're going to start a sort of means testing, you wouldn't quite literally, you would get nowhere simply because if a government was, and all the governments in the world, as far as I know, give a grant to the head of state, whoever it is, and also in many cases their families would benefit. I mean, the case of Germany, for example, former presidents get pensions and all of that. I mean, this idea of means testing royals is simply destructive.
Richard, the thing is, though, I mean, this morning I saw a poll, and the public, it's just not popular with the public. And
they wouldn't be given the one thing.
90% of the public think it's wrong.
No. The reason they think it's wrong is because of the way the question's been asked. They wouldn't answer that question about the monarchy as such. What is the issue is this.
Yeah.
If, for example, you ask them, and this is a fact that it wasn't reported today in the Mail and the Telegraph, Prince of Wales's trust was founded by him on Naval Pay in 1976. It's now got a 1 million young people who are disadvantaged have now benefited. Three branches opened abroad. Now, since that isn't reported, if you ask them about that, nearly 100% would approve of it. So it depends what aspect you take. Nobody would argue, other than Republicans, that the Queen would move out of Buckingham Palace because it's a worldwide, world famous building. So, I mean, from that angle, what you're dealing with is how the question's asked. That's the problem with complicated figures like this, which also involve the monarchy's benefit for charity.
But why do they have to be so extravagant, though? You know,
well,
I mean,
it's a five for the five houses, staff houses in the one so-called cottage.
Yeah.
That was what they wanted, a base for the future. And you'll find the Sussexes are an amazing charitable brand. So what the fact that it's cost $2.5 million now, what you'll find is that they help others, whether it's gender equality, whether it's Invictus, whether it's Centibale, or whether it's mental health. I mean, no one has the charitable reach of the British royals.
I was going to say,
that is part of it, as tourism and also the soft pie element.
Richard, what does Harry and Meghan bring it? For instance, their job is to go and do all these events and turn up this stuff. So they're paid a figure for that, are they?
Well, no. In point of fact, that's absolutely wrong. And it's important listeners realise what a benefit the royal family is in this regard. For this, you have to thank Edward III in 1333.
I think I see him last Tuesday.
Edward, you did, yes, you know well. He set up the duchy of Cornwall.
Wow.
And the duchy of Cornwall pays, except for the sovereign grant, certain building and for certain travel. And it pays for Charles, Camilla, William, Kate, and Harry and Meghan.
Isn't it time they modelled it up a little bit and had someone from maybe last century
from
the Royals?
From like Love Island.
I think you were referring perhaps to the Duchy of Lancaster, with which the Queen pays the royals,
yeah,
who are the other members of the royal family. That dates from 1399.
Wow.
To get 20 million from that. And there you have it, 3,200 patronages. I'm glad you appreciate it.
Richard, yeah, on another note, how was Ascot?
Yes, he enjoyed
it. Ascot was absolutely splendid.
He loved
5 days, a kaleidoscope of colour, fascinating racing. I did well on the bets. And
did you?
Also, the beautiful, beautiful millinery. The hats were brilliant. And some of the restaurants there, I mean, very, very good. Some of them are way beyond me. Others are Windsor Graves, I recommend. Wonderful seafood.
Well, listen, last of all, Richard, we're doing a thing today on tattoos. have you had a tattoo?
The answer is no. Will I have one? No. Do I think some people look sexy with them? Yes.
Oh.
So you don't turn up like in Spain and take your top off and you've got West Ham United on your chest?
I leave that for me to know and others to find out.
Richard, it's always lovely to have you on our show. We really love talking to you. Thank you very much. Enjoy your... You're going on to Jeremy Vine today, aren't you?
Just in 20 minutes, absolutely.
Wonderful.
Well, have a good show. Say hello to Jeremy for me. I know his brother very well. There we are.
Richard Fitzwilliams,
thank
there,
you.
Friend of the show and royal correspondent.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're still going to be talking a little bit about tattoos. In fact, before we do, let me tell you what happened with me.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay?
So I'm about 14, okay?
Yeah.
And I thought, as a few people started having tattoos, and I thought, I fancy a tattoo. Mm. And in the sort of 80s,
yes,
people used to have a scroll on their arm.
Right.
With, like, mum or dad.
Yeah.
Right? And I thought, I'll have a scroll on my arm.
Yes.
And I'll put Martin in it, in the scroll. Martin, right? Just so people know my name. There he is.
How old was you?
14. Martin.
Martin. But right? You don't like Martin.
I don't, but I thought I'll run with Martin. Right, that's my name. That's where I'm going. And so my dad had always said to me, okay?
Yeah.
My dad had always said to me.
You come home with a tattoo, boy.
No.
You're for it.
He always said to me, well, right, I will back you with anything you do. I'll support you. He went, number one, don't take drugs.
Right.
Number two, you're not having a motorbike. Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
And number three,
yeah,
you can't have a tattoo. And I was like, okay. So I thought, okay.
I like that. You know, I thought of the first two.
I can run with all that. But I really fancied the tattoo.
Did
and
you?
It was a summer's day.
Wow.
And I thought, what I've done, I got my mate to draw a scroll on my arm with a pen.
Yeah.
I put Martin in the middle of it, okay? And he done it really neatly and it looked great.
It was
on my right arm. Anyway, summer's day, I go home and I go in the back garden.
Yeah.
And there's me dad and me uncle Ron. Right?
I remember Ron.
Right?
Yeah,
now,
of course.
Ron had been in the Navy years.
Yes.
Ago. Ron was like Popeye. He was a powerful.
Powerful looking man, he was, yeah.
He was small.
Big arms, didn't he?
Big arms, huge arms.
Yeah.
But he had like faded tattoos on his forearms and his biceps, right? So I went in the back garden, and there's me dad and Ron in their Fred Perry shorts with no tops on.
Yeah.
And I go in the back garden.
Right.
I've got me Fred Perry shorts on.
Sure, of course you have.
With no top on.
Right.
And I just thought, let's just see what happens,
Oh, you tried it.
And I seen my dad. He went, what's that? And I said, what, on my arm? And he went, what have you done? And I thought, now this is a telling point.
Yeah.
If he'd have said to me, oh, you idiot. Right?
Yeah,
and I'd have got away with it.
Right.
I would have gone out and had it done properly.
Really?
He run at me like a steam train. He was screaming, yeah! And I quickly licked my fingers and I rubbed it off me. I said, it's only a transfer. It's a transfer. And he would have killed me. Right? And that was the telling point.
And he was a big fella, your dad.
He was a big fella.
And Big John come at you.
And I thought, right, I can't have it. And my Uncle Ron said to me, listen, he said, every time I go on holiday, I'm embarrassed by these tattoos.
Really?
He said, I take my top off.
It's funny, isn't it?
He went, when I was a young man, they were great. He said.
But you know what, though? You see, the thing is about that is that was the 80s, right? So in those days it was like that, but now, of course, it's not.
No.
It's not a stigma at all. You can wear your tattoos with pride.
I don't like these.
We're still in that mindset. of what they meant to us. It was like, you went out when you were drunk, you had your tattoo, and you regretted it in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay, but now,
easy for you,
I couldn't say regret, could I?
No.
Regret.
Did you ever tattoo?
No.
We've got some friends, a mutual friend, and him and his wife, in the last 10 years, he's got a nice business, he's got a lovely home life, big house, they've got nice cars, everything. Suddenly, the pair of them have got sleeves of tattoos all the way down their arms.
Nah. And what, are they in their late 40s, early 50s?
Early 50s.
Yeah, that's...
But not just him.
Right.
Her as well.
Her as well. Yeah, I don't like that much.
They look like a tapestry, the pair of them.
It's a good album by Carole King.
Yeah, well, this isn't.
No, that's not a good album.
It's terrible. In fact, I shall tell you a story about him when we were West Ham fans.
After this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
We're still asking you.
Yeah.
What's the maddest tattoo you've ever had?
Or seen anyone have.
Always seen anyone.
Yeah. We want the lols.
This is following on for Only Fools and Horses fan who has had the massive tattoo of the cast.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Well, it's mad. Sega's fat, you know, fat back.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got Del Boy dripping into Rodney and Rodney dripping into Albert,
fight.
You know.
Uncle Albert. What about Trigger? Is Trigger in amongst it? I'm sure
Trigger's there, yeah.
Voice he's
got
there.
He's the one who provides all the lols. He loves the lols.
It's all coming up on the Bell and Sperling Show. We are here till 1:30 today.
Patrick, do you like lots of lols?
Lots of lols, mate. Yeah.
Patrick, just obviously this came up. Piers Morgan ran it this morning. He's on Love Island.
Right.
And one of the girls,
who cares what one?
Well, she's quite nice. You quite like her.
No, I wouldn't
and
like
she
her.
She said, where's the lols? Where's the lols?
Well, there's no lols. Okay. There's no lols.
What do you take lols to be? Lots of love or laugh out loud?
It's laugh out loud.
It's laugh out loud. I told you that.
Okay.
All right, what's lots of love?
Well, yeah, but it's because sometimes parents get that wrong. So it's like, oh, sorry to have to tell you, grandma's died. Lol.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Really?
Like crying laughing face instead of the crying sad face.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
Where they get it wrong, isn't it? They think it's lots of love, but it's not.
Oh, we're taking a wicket. Oh. We have taken a wicket at last. 123 for one.
What's going on with the cricket?
Wow. I mean, Ali's Patrick. Got David Warner. Get in. Boo him off.
At last.
Pull this one back, Patch, can we?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll be absolutely fine. We're going to win the World Cup. Cricket's coming home.
We'll have to write a new song. Just give us a little bit of insight. Obviously, you did a wonderful interview today with Piers Morgan, which we're going to play a little bit later.
Yes.
But just tell us what your thoughts were on the Bojo. Let's have a little chat about the fracas, the rumpus on Friday night.
What a strange few days, by the way.
Yeah, it was weird. Well, I mean, it is, but I mean, it's been quite a strange few years, actually, hasn't it, really, with politics in this country? Basically, Boris Johnson's had a monumental row with his much younger partner at her flat, and next door were some Guardian reading theatre production staff, one of which is a close-up magician, who recorded the row...
Oh, wait, he's a close-up magician.
Yeah, he's a close-up magician. And he and she sent it into The Guardian. Now, a couple of issues on this. Firstly, I had a massive row with my missus last night, right? But the neighbours didn't record it and they didn't call the police.
Do you know I said that yesterday?
Yeah.
I said that, are they going to... And apparently they said, no, I would... Who was it we were talking to? Someone said, no, I would definitely would call the police and record it. Yeah,
it's a good job you don't live next door to me. They'd be around every 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, there's a row in my house every night. It's normally with the kids, but it to the point where... You know, he's screaming. People must be thinking we're beating him up.
It's not a flat.
It's not a flat, but it doesn't matter. It's, you know, windows are open, plus the fact it's a little bit warm lately.
Yeah.
And the trouble is, the spotlight is on him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, this is the thing, which is, and actually, you're going to hear this later from Piers Morgan, which is that he said, look, you do have to be having quite a shouting match for it to kind of come through the walls especially audibly in terms of where you can make out exact words and stuff. So, look, obviously it kicked off. I don't really feel as though you should have to justify what you were arguing with your partner about. I don't think that's necessarily in the public interest. However, the big question today centres around this staged photograph that emerged of them recently. It's on the front page of the Telegraph, which is of him and her, Carrie, sat in what looks like a kind of the Garden of Eden, really, or on some kind of deck chairs. Now, Nick Ferrari pinned Boris on this earlier today, where he said, look, Boris, that's not your hair now. That picture was taken a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and it obviously was. And Boris says he doesn't comment on loved ones. So, you know, there we are. So, look, I think, what I would say is I have been surprised by Boris Johnson. I thought that he would kind of sweep to victory and he would put up, he would put on the performance of being a credible Prime Minister. Yeah. But actually, realistically, that he's gone this polar opposite way.
The fact that
pictures have emerged of the inside of his car that show things like just litter and rubbish and unpaid parking fines. He turned up to a debate with one of his socks inside out. He's had a massive row with his missus and then staged a photograph in the press. You do think, what kind of ocean-going disaster would this geezer be?
Yeah.
Do you think Churchill was a bit like that? And no. Look, I'm not. Wait a minute. I'm not comparing him. We've seen those feet with Gary Oldman where he was sort of playing Churchill. Do you think Churchill was a little bit like that?
I think that Churchill was more competent because this is it. I think Churchill had the extreme level of focus where actually, all right, he would wake up with a glass of champers and have a cigar, but actually he was working all the time.
Yes.
I don't get the impression that Boris Johnson is working all the time.
And let's not forget, social media was nowhere. Yeah. So you could be private in those days. You can't be private now.
No. Well, exactly. And he was supposed to attend a leaders' debate on Sky News and called off. Yeah. So that would have just been a one-man show with Jeremy Hunt. So he had to cancel it. Now, Jeremy Hunt, for his part in this, has actually just been playing it pretty straight down the line.
He has,
giving off quite a good impression of a bloke that might be able to run a country.
I think so too, yeah.
I was thinking that route on Friday night must have taken ages because... Do you know what I mean? It must have been a nightmare. It must be a nightmare. Just to have a row with him.
It's like arguing with early years Gareth Gates, wouldn't it?
Always used to do that one. It's not your birthday, Gareth.
Early years Gareth Gates.
Stop blowing the candle out, Gareth.
But anyway, Boris is not doing particularly well with this. The issue that the country's got, really, yeah, is just how deeply popular he is with the Conservative vote base. There's about 145,000 Conservative Party members who all end up voting on this, and he's their man, really. Yeah. So you could see that maybe he's just going to win anyway.
But if he does get in, he could be then voted out by them, couldn't he?
Well, this is it. I mean, this is the thing. So basically, some MPs, and the number in this fluctuates as to who said it, about 10, have said that they would immediately kind of trigger a vote of no confidence. Yes. A lot of them have said they'd happily bring down the party if the no deal thing was put to the table. But to be honest with you, I don't know if they really can anymore. I mean, October the 31st is this deadline for Brexit. Boris Johnson realistically isn't going to be able to negotiate a new... Well, I say that. Probably isn't going to be able to negotiate a new deal with Brussels by then. And it is going to get to a point where you think, we do just have to leave at some point. And
If you're looking at both their policies, let's put aside him having a doodah with his girlfriend on Friday. Avoiding the questions from Ian Dow, avoiding the questions from Nick Ferrari. Yeah. Let's put that aside. His policies on getting out of Brexit, are they better than Jeremy Hunt?
Jeremy Hunt is not totally adverse to no deal, but basically says that is not something that he really wants. Yeah. And because the EU have just had their European Parliament elections, they're choosing a new commission, we are not really going to get a new deal before October 31st. That really means delaying Brexit, right?
Yeah.
But with Boris Johnson comes in, he said, right, look, whatever happens on October 31st, we are leaving. So it depends what your view is on this, because, you know, if you are someone who would be willing to get a better deal or try to get a better deal and is terrified of no deal, then Jeremy Hunt's your guy, right? But if you don't really give a toss and you think, oh, it's about time that we sacked all this off, to be perfectly honest with you, then Boris Johnson's your man. So that's kind of where that centres on.
Just for some of my mates listen to this and they pick up on bits and pieces, just explain WTO rules.
Oh, come on, mate. I haven't got all day.
Just a basic.
Well, basically, the WTO rules is World Trade Organization rules, right? So that is the kind of set of trade tariffs that govern international trade. Now, Europe has its own version of that within European countries. So we have, like, Europe-specific rules. So any country that wants to do business with the European Union basically has to abide by those rules. Yeah, and that takes years to come to fruition. Canada, it took them 9 years to come up with a trade deal with the EU. Whereas WTO rules are set basically universally, right? Mm-hmm. Which would mean, well, I mean, the EU will dispute this, but it means we have got a fallback option there, which is a basic set of tariffs, a universal set of tariffs that actually, in a lot of cases, are cheaper than the EU. So it's designed to basically ensure the easy trade between any country all around the world. And actually, it's the EU who've kind of been flouting that and drawing their own ones up. So essentially, what we're saying is there is a pre-existing set of rules there that requires no negotiation or no additional preparation that we can just go, well, we're trading with you on those lines. In the same way we would trade with Kenya or we would trade with, well, we would trade with Canada, for example.
So we got that to fall back on if all else fails.
Well, this is it. This is what we're saying is that yes, we do. Now, there seems to be some kind of discrepancy over this going, well, you can't just fall back on WTO rules. I don't quite understand. I've not heard a convincing argument as to why we can't. I don't understand why we can't. The point of them being World Trade Organization rules is that anyone in the world can sign up for them. Mm. And we do trade with other countries on WTO rules. So I don't see why someone might ring up and correct me, 0208 70 2558, but I don't see why we couldn't just default to them.
Of course, without a doubt. And I think that some people are saying we don't want to do that. But I'm thinking, actually, it's not that bad. Mm. It's not as if everything's going to stop. You know, like we said in Millennium, you know, there was these people that said, at 12 o'clock, the world's going to explode, right? We're all going to fall into the sea.
How many times that happens?
And so, really, if we don't have a deal, we've got that to fall back on. So, nothing's really going to change that much.
No, well, this is the argument that they're saying, which is, look, we're making a lot of bluster about all this. And all right, in some respects, I mean, I don't know the exact intricacies of exactly what, say, the WTO rules are when it comes to, you know, exact tariffs on clothing or things like that.
Yeah,
but
but
they are there, and they are deemed, certainly when it comes to footwear, clothing and food, to be deemed cheaper than the tariffs that we are at the minute. So what they're saying is that lower income families, so people that, you know, because they're essentials, aren't they? Like clothing, footwear and food.
Well, we just go to Sports Direct.
I'll put food first.
You put food first.
Absolutely.
But we know we can go and get 30 pairs of white socks for a pound in Sports Direct. You know, and terrible trainers.
Oh, big time, yeah. I once bought a set of shoes from Primark that broke before I got out the shop.
It's true.
Petch.
By the way, on Piers Morgan, did you, when you interviewed Piers today, did you ask him about his management in the UNICEF game?
No, I didn't. I wish I had, but no, I did not.
Patrick, the outcome of, what do you think, the Boris situation?
Yeah.
Is he still going to be prime minister? I mean, in your opinion?
Ooh, it's a lot more 50-50 than I thought it was a week ago.
Right.
Yes, I do. Yep. Because I do think that the vast majority of Conservative Party members would want him to do it. And they are ultimately the ones voting for him. So, yes, I'd say 60-40 in favour of Boris.
Where it was like 90-10, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nailed on.
It was nailed on.
Well, that's because he was staying under the radar.
Yeah.
He hadn't put a foot wrong. And
it's,
we did say,
really,
I think we said on Friday on this show, we said, if he can just stay under the radar, he's home and dry.
And look what happened.
Listen, Patrick, round of applause for Patrick.
Yeah, we love him.
Wonderful.
Patrick, by the way, this morning, of course, you did the cricket show.
Yeah.
You just done a house show a little bit. And then you've got your drive time. You are all over the place, aren't you?
Well, I'm just on one large ego trip.
You're on drive time with Patrick Christie's and Richard Lee, 3:30 to 7 o'clock. Do not miss it.
We will be coming. We are going to hear Patrick's interview with Piers Morgan. But after the break, we'll be talking to Carl Cullinane, head of research at the Sutton Trust, who have run a study that suggests the top jobs in sport are still going mostly to privately educated elites.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
So I was telling you about my mate who had a tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
When we were kids. So my mate Charlie used to take me over West Ham.
Yeah.
He was 2 years older than me, but he was like 2 foot taller than me.
Yeah. I mean, in those days, if you were 2 years older, it was a lot.
Yeah, but he was like
when you were kids.
He had a hairy chest when he was 11.
Yeah, I know.
It's just one of those, you know.
Yeah.
And so my dad didn't mind. He would take me over West Ham, Charlie, and he'd look after me.
Yeah.
And in those days, you'd sit in the stand. You'd stand in the stand, but I would sit on the bar. There used to be a bar that you could sort of the crash bars that people would hold on to.
Right.
So I would sit on that, and Charlie would hold me. He'd steady me, so just so I could see the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Charlie done a tattoo on his arm of hammers. He'd done it himself with Indian ink.
Good night.
Right, okay.
No, fancy that.
Now, the old ways you used to do that, you used to get the old compass, you know, like that you have at school with the old sort of needle.
Yeah.
The, you know, the
point. Yeah.
And he would get the Indian ink,
right,
which is like a permanent ink.
Yes.
And he would basically make holes in his arm, okay, in the shape of hammers.
Yeah.
Hammer sign. It's only about inch and a half big.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, it was terrible. I mean, it was all jagged. It looked rough.
Yeah.
And so he was about 12. I was about 10.
Yeah.
When he got to 15, okay, He decided that all his mates at school, obviously a couple of years older than me, they were all Arsenal fans.
Right.
And this is the time of the casuals when everyone was going.
Yeah, the casuals.
And the cost stuff. And
yeah.
So he'd go over...
Lionel Scott.
He'd go over Arsenal with his friends. Mm. And of course, if it was in the summer, he couldn't have a Hammers tattoo on his arm, right?
Yeah.
So you know what he did?
Go on.
He cut it out of his arm.
Aye.
With a knife.
All right, Sam.
He cut...
Yeah, all right, that's enough.
The tattoo out... Because he was an he became an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, okay.
And it got infected.
All right.
And it got infected. Ah! And his arm fell off. No, his arm didn't fall off.
Oh.
But it's terrible, isn't it?
All right, mate. That's enough.
No, but the worst part about this is...
Oh, what a story.
You know the worst part about this?
Yeah.
Who changes teams? How could you be a West Ham fan and change to an Arsenal fan?
Especially if you've had it in Indian ink.
Indian ink in your arm.
In your arm.
It's a terrible...
Well, I mean, he couldn't have been very passionate about him when he had the Indian ink put in his arm.
He wasn't. And it, but it's just, how mad is
that? Is he still an Arsenal fan?
He's not a massive football fan. He's the one who's got all the sleeve tattoos all over his arm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a mad one, though. But there you go. I don't know whether he's listening today.
No.
There you go.
I'm sure. Hello, Charlie, if you're listening.
Charlie Ramblin, there you go. Report has found that those who go to private schools are more likely to carve out a career, not carve out a tattoo on your arm, carve out a career in certain sports. Mm-hmm. Elitist Britain looked at more than 5,000 people in the country's top professionals and their educational background.
Yeah.
Some 7% of people are privately educated.
Yes.
43% of men and 35% of women playing international cricket
for
England went to private school.
Of course they did.
Of course they did.
It's a load of rubbish, isn't it?
Oh, wait a minute.
Isn't it awful?
What sports did you play at school?
Okay, you know me. I'm not a sports person.
Well,
I didn't play any sports. I went to a preliminary rugby school.
Right, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It was a rugby school.
Yeah.
They loved their rugby. Got triple rugby sometimes.
Yes.
It was like, oh no, it's triple rugby.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Certain schools will provide different sports that sort of, you know, and it is generally that more private schools will do rugby and cricket.
Okay.
We're joined by Carl Cullinane, head of research at the Sutton Trust.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Carl.
Afternoon.
Carl, so look, we pretty much know this, don't we? We look at the private schools. I know that there's a private school near me that some of my friends' kids go to, Chigwell School. It's a well-renowned school. And they will play rugby and cricket on hockey.
Yeah.
Whereas at my kids' school, you know, got the runny noses and snot dripping down them, they will only play football.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say that anything in this report is particularly surprising. You know, it's reflecting very long-term trends.
Yeah.
But it is worth reiterating, I think, and emphasising to people that access, you know, we think of sport as a particularly kind of universal thing, but it's not. In reality, it's not. Access to sport is very unequal in terms of the people that get to play it and succeed in it.
Yeah, I mean, so look, okay, so football basically is your everyman's sport, right? Anybody can play.
Yeah.
I mean, Bell's son goes to Spurs Academy. He's 10 years old. You know, I mean, and Bell's not. You know, he's not higher up in the. You know, and Cash goes to an ordinary school, I believe.
Yeah.
So football is your everyman's sport, but you got your cricket. And of course, tennis is very, oh dear, oh yes, isn't it, tennis?
Well,
you have to have some money for tennis.
I think tennis is played generally played at schools,
no,
isn't it?
No, Carl, isn't it?
Tennis is probably relatively equally played at private independent schools. I'm not sure what the exact statistics are. But yeah, I mean, so what we saw with football is that, so we looked at, you know, all sorts of professions across society, not just sports. We included politics and culture and the media and everything. And professional football was the only profession where people from private schools are underrepresented.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, though, Carl, that we're missing a trick here and they're not going around, let's say, ordinary schools and with ordinary kids that haven't got all the money for private... Do you think we're missing the trick? We're not seeing the potential, maybe, that kids to play cricket and tennis and rugby?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what happens when there are these kind of rigid lines between people, you know, when they grow up, is that you end up with a kind of wasted talent.
Yeah.
The people with the best potential to play cricket or rugby aren't necessarily the ones in families that can afford to play for private schools. So, you know, you're losing out on a lot of people.
Absolutely,
and you're, you know, artificially harming yourself.
I agree.
I just... I'm just trying to think. I mean, look, a lot of the professional footballers will come out of those sort of schools, but surely that's the profession that's actually making more money than rugby and cricket.
It's weird. Yeah, it's right.
That is absolutely true, and football is probably the most meritocratic of the sports. But there are, you know, there are a lot of increasing levels of problem with Olympic sports. So in the last few years, there's been kind of more of an emphasis on Olympic medals in sport funding. So a lot of the medals that the UK wins in the Olympics are in kind of specialised sports like rowing and sailing and equestrian. So a lot of those kind of sports, which are dominated by people from independent schools and who have access to expensive facilities, a lot of the sports funding is going to them. Mm. And sports like basketball, which many more people play, are getting much less funding. So it's really problematic in terms of the access to sport for people as a whole. Obviously, everybody plays football, but there are a lot of other popular sports that don't get the support, that don't get the funding because of the way the UK sport funding is set up. Mm.
I did a gig about 6 weeks ago at a private school called Felsted, which was unbelievable. I've never seen facilities like it for sports. There was long tennis courts, there was hard court tennis courts, there was so many football pitches and rugby pitches and cricket. It was incredible. Now, the only thing I would say is about schools like this is they create more time for the kids to learn those sports, don't they? Whereas, let's say, the state schools that the kids are going to, they'll have one or two sessions of PE a week.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, private schools have the money, the resources and the time to kind of invest in sport in particular, but a kind of extracurricular activities as a whole. You know, state schools just don't have the money or the time. They're under a huge amount of pressure. They have lots more kids, so the class sizes in private schools are much smaller, so that they've more time to give individual coaching and individual teaching. So state schools are at a massive disadvantage in sport, and you see that private schools really dominate school level sports. So, you know, across a range of sports, private schools are much more likely to kind of win the national sporting competitions, which seems totally unfair.
What about general athletes? Because we have our very own Ewan Thomas, who does a show here at Love Sport on a Friday. And
Saturday weekend breakfast. Yeah.
Strangely enough, it's actually my son's district sports day today, and I'm not going because I'm doing this show. But I look at some of the kids there who are unbelievable sprinters, and you know, they've got to go on to have good potential. And I went to school with Sally Gunnell, so we went to a state school, and she was a year older than me at school. Now she did pretty well.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, do we still find athletes out of state schools?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't look at athletics specifically. We looked at the Olympics as a whole, and I think there are much differences across sports. So it's those sports that require more facilities are the ones that are dominated by private schools. So, you know, your sailing and your rowing and your equestrian. But athletics, I think, is definitely more kind of democratic because it's based on kind of physical attributes, which are, you know, distributed across the population, regardless of how much kind of income they have.
Yeah.
So I think athletics is more likely to be a kind of level playing field than some of those other sports.
I mean, also the study looked at jobs outside of sport, didn't it? I mean, for example, I will give you an example. Belle and I are presenters here at Love Sport Radio. Now, if we hadn't have been Belle and Sperling, with our record, you know, of what we'd done previous in the past, had our couple of hits or whatever, and had our profile, we would never have been able to be presenters. Because to be a presenter, you have to go through, you know, I mean, like the people here, you have to go to university to study that, to study media. Do you see what I'm saying? So, it's the same sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And media was one of the sectors that had the highest levels of kind of dominance of people from private school and Oxbridge and Russell Group backgrounds. The media, particularly, news editors and broadcasters, are very dominated by kind of more well-off people who, you know, have gone to independent schools and kind of speak very well.
Yes.
And similar with kind of newspaper columnists and, you know, the type of people who, you know, shape the agenda. They're also, you know, and they come through a real, there's a real pipeline from private school into Oxford and Cambridge and then into the media. And it's very damaging in terms of the diversity of voices that that we hear every day.
Oh, you should see the office here. It is a brain box, a melee of brain box people from ex-grads. It really is. Just the other part of the study is 65% of senior judges are privately educated and 57% of cabinet ministers went to Oxbridge.
Yeah. The senior judges were the kind of the most exclusive group. So practically every member of the senior judges has either gone to a private school or to Oxbridge. It's an incredibly exclusive group. Mm. And also the cabinet, as you say. I mean, politics in general is very dominated by Oxford and Cambridge, and Oxford in particular. I mean, almost every prime minister since the war has come from Oxford specifically, apart from Gordon Brown, who went to Edinburgh.
Ah, yeah, Gordon Brown. Okay. Oh, how good was he? Carl, just before you go, does any of these people, we're running a story today on tattoos, any of these people have giant tattoos across their chest?
That's not something we specifically ask.
I bet. Carl, listen, thanks ever so much for your time.
Thank you very much,
Carl. Very interesting, yeah.
Carl Cullinane there, Head of Research at the Sutton Trust.
I always think, you know, that the jobs don't go to the right people sometimes.
Well,
it's a matter of class.
It's where you carve your... You get carved out. I'll give you a clue. A good friend of ours who owns a huge company, his son and his daughter went to unbelievable education.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't come from a good education at all. It's terrible. But he had the money to put him for a good education.
Yeah.
And he actually said to me, I'll be honest with you, my son is quite thick. I don't need to go to this school told that other people's kids are far more intelligent than my son.
Right.
Okay, he said. However,
yes,
it's the contacts that he's made.
Yeah, no. Fair enough.
You know, and he's gone on to do really well.
Bell and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.